Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David
and Donald.
This week, we're going to be talking about law of attraction and manifestation and all that kind of good stuff. And Donald, why don't you go ahead and start us off on that?
I believe a lot of people understand what the law of attraction is from the movie The Secret. It came out and people's idea of what was possible changed quite a bit because the movie was just very to the point and there. But at the same time, having worked with the law of attraction and taught the law of attraction and coached people with the law of attraction, there are a lot of things that the movie does not really get into because they weren't able to for the time that they had. The Secret is basically a really good beginner's course for an introduction. It's like Law of Attraction 101, watch The Secret, plain and simple.
If you could describe the Law of Attraction in three sentences for people who are not very familiar with it, how would you describe it?
Ask and you shall receive.
Okay.
I mean, that's the easiest way that I know how to describe the Law of Attraction. It's just that whole quote. It's just what you put out will come back to you. You get to choose by asking what you want to have come back to you.
A lot of people are really skeptical about the idea of just asking you receive because there are people who ask for things and don't receive them.
Mm-hmm.
How does the law of attraction take that into account?
You have to get into a little bit more of the complexities of human psychology with the law of attraction. And what I found is it has to do with your subconscious, like what we were talking about, I believe, in the healing episode, where your subconscious is basically in charge, is in the driver's seat. Your conscious mind is only working about 5, maybe 10% at most of, you know, driving the vehicle of your life. And so a lot of people have this 5 to 10% driver just putting it out there and saying, I want to go here, I want to do this, I want to do this. But they have all this subconscious stuff from their whole life that is built up from different issues, different attitudes, different belief systems. If what your conscious mind is putting out there does not agree with what your subconscious has learned, then you have a contradiction and nothing happens.
So now the tricky part then is how do you discern what your conscious mind is putting out versus what your subconscious? I mean, the subconscious is kind of a mysterious creature, isn't it? How do you know? People are like, I really want to be financially wealthy and all this other stuff. And yet they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously something in the subconscious that is preventing that from happening, that they're attracting something else. So how does a person go and uncover where the block is occurring?
For me, I like to use meditation. I'm able to find little pieces of subconscious thoughts and attitudes from that. Another way is talking to a therapist. A therapist or a counselor can actually find contradictions in what you're saying and what is happening, you know, in your subconscious from your actions, per se.
Mm-hmm.
I have to just share this story because a few months ago, you know, I was sitting there and I was not making the level of money that I wanted to with my business. I was in one of my meditations and I was going, what's the hold up with this whole money thing? It took a little bit to get through the layers, but I actually hit this layer and all of a sudden this one thing popped out and it said, you cannot make any money unless you have a college degree. If you analyze that saying, the way it's written, you cannot make any money unless you have a college degree, that means, well, I don't have an official technical or any other kind of degree from a college. My subconscious was saying, you don't have a degree, you can't make any money. Then I used some of my techniques that I used for healing and took care of that issue. I'll tell you, after a few, probably about 2-3 weeks, things started picking up very, very quickly.
Because you used a technique to deal with the issue of your belief about needing a college degree in order to make money?
That was one of the programs in my subconscious that, regardless of what my conscious mind wanted to say, was holding me back, because that was one of the programs that, you know, was running the 90 to 95% of my life. You know, there was a clash there between my conscious mind and my subconscious mind, where my conscious mind was sitting here saying, I want to make money. I want to be successful at this business. This is something I'm passionate about. This is something I love. This is something I'm going to devote the rest of my life to. And I'd also like to pay the bills and, you know, have a roof over the head at the same time. But my subconscious was saying, you can't do that. And so removing that block, removing that issue from the subconscious, it all of a sudden was gone. Then my conscious mind could take over, and that moved me much further with the law of attraction, actually going into action and attracting more clients and more abundance.
That's awesome. One of the things I'm wondering about, though, is you did mention therapy. One solution to kind of dig into the subconscious, you also mentioned meditation. Now, therapy and meditation can kind of get to the blocks. If you can't afford a therapist and you're doing meditation, not everybody has the same tools that you have, because you said that you used one of your techniques you use in healing, and I know it's a proprietary system. Then what would people do on their own if they don't have those same tools? I mean, how do they switch the subconscious block once they find it?
One of the first things that I started to do to find the blocks was sit and write for 45 minutes. When you start sitting and writing, the first 10, 15, sometimes even 20 minutes is all layered stuff from your conscious mind. Once you start actually getting into the flow of it, then you start seeing your subconscious stuff. Once you start seeing that, then you can actually start using some of the positive techniques such as affirmations to a degree. Those are a good place to start, but you also want to start developing habits. You want to develop habits that don't go against what you find in your subconscious, because like we said in the healing episode, the ego is a very vicious beast, and if it feels like it's being threatened, then it's going to put up all these blocks and barriers. So you
absolutely
you want to find a way to work through that by taking action, conscious action. One of the things that humans are really good at is keeping to their routines. Well, one of the things that you need to do to begin with is create a routine. If you have a desire to exercise more, but you still have a lot of difficulty actually getting up and doing that, one of the things that you need to do is change your shoulds into, you know, musts. A lot of people say, I should go up and exercise. I should do this. If you turn it into a must, if you take out the excuses and turn it into a must, where imagine somebody had a gun to your head and it's like, are you going to exercise or are you not? And if you don't exercise, I'm pulling the trigger. It turns into a must like that. There's a lot more motivation than, you know, should. Because shoulds are just easy to blow off. You don't have to sit there and do the whole routine the whole time. You know, if you want to get up to a point where you're running or walking 2 or 3 miles a day, start off and just walk around the block. Walk for 5-10 minutes. The idea is to set the routine by doing what you want to do. And then once the routine is set, then you can increase the time. You can do this by writing stuff out, because the subconscious will start coming out after the conscious mind starts getting bored. And then setting a routine to create the actions that you want, your body and your mind will start saying, hey, this is not so bad. This is not as difficult. Your ego will say, hey, you know what? I thought exercising was going to be hard, but this is actually easy. This is actually almost kind of enjoyable. And then that will change the internal subconscious tapes of saying, I don't want to exercise.
Well, that sounds a little easier said than done.
Nothing worth doing is easy, David. Well, yeah. That's one of the cliches that's out there.
I always kind of laugh at when people talk about something as hard work. And for some reason, hard work is really heralded in Western society. I don't know about Eastern. Mm-hmm. You're rewarded for hard work. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy really works hard, and it's always kind of put on this pedestal. But, you know, the thing is, I've seen people work really hard and accomplish very little. To me, it's working efficiently. And working efficiently doesn't mean quickly. Working efficiently means you are putting the least amount of resistance into what you're doing. Not to say that it's not good, because at times it can be hard, sure. But working hard implies that it's always hard all the time and you're putting so much force into it. That's what hard work kind of implies. You're either putting a lot of force into it or a lot of time into it. It implies that it's strenuous and that you really have to exert yourself in one way or another. Then do more than you can really handle. That's not always what I would say the best way to put it is, because people believe if I work hard, I'll accomplish this, which can be true, but may not be true. But if you work more efficiently, I think you can find the enjoyment in it.
I agree wholeheartedly. I agree completely with that statement. And that's a really good statement, because one of the things that people work really hard to acquire in, you know, Western culture is money, like you said earlier. If there is a belief that you have to work hard to be successful, then what happens if you don't feel like you're working hard? All of a sudden, there's a contradiction between your conscious mind and your subconscious, where your subconscious is saying, I have to work hard or I'm not successful.
Well, and here's what's interesting about what you just said. That kind of goes to the hierarchy of wants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's take the exercise you're talking about. And the reason I said it's easier said than done is that you say make a routine out of it, make a habit. And people are really motivated out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
I want to lose 20, 25 pounds. I want to lose 25 pounds. I know I've got to exercise every day for 30 days to really get it locked in, to make a new pattern, to make a new habit. They're exercising and they get 8 days into it. And on that eighth day, they're just like, oh God, I don't feel like doing it today. I just don't. And the thing is that carrot on the stick, it looked good at the time because they were all pumped and they were in the moment of it. But 8 days have passed. That moment's long passed. Something else has come up and they're just like, you know what? No, I'd just rather sit on the TV, call them for a pizza and watch TV. And they do. And that's what happens. And then, and you know what? They realize how sweet that was. I didn't have to exert myself, whatever with the goal. I like this.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's just like the subconscious, you strip away a lot of the mystery of it, of the subconscious, when you make the subconscious conscious. Because people always think subconscious is this realm that you can't access except for through hypnosis or uncovering all these painful memories, all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's like a series of wants. One want will always win out over the other. And underneath all these wants is just some greater want. People say, I want to lose 25 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what they really want? Well, why do they want to lose 25 pounds?
Exactly.
Well, I want to feel better about myself. What does that mean, feeling better about yourself? Oh, that I look good. Well, if you look good, what does that get you? Well, it gets me positive attention. And what do you get from positive attention? It makes me feel good about myself. So basically, the person wants to feel good about themselves, and this is the path they think they need to take to do it.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, unfortunately, I think, in this is that there is a condition put on it, which goes back to what you're saying. You're saying, you know, if I can't make the income I want without a college degree, I can't feel good about myself without being in a certain shape or at a certain weight. So now, where are we?
That is one of the holdups that people run into when they start working with the law of attraction. Over and over and over again. I'm going to do a little bit of coaching here. I'm going to take your example because it is the perfect example of what people run into when they actually start consciously putting out the law of attraction. So let's say you're a person and you want to lose 25 pounds and you've decided that you are going to exercise those 25 pounds off. From your example, it's not so much the losing of the weight that's important, it's the feeling good about yourself so that other people will recognize you so that you can feel good about yourself even more.
Mm-hmm.
Stop focusing on losing the 25 pounds. And if exercising will make you feel good so that other people notice you so that you'll feel good about being noticed, there's your motivation right there. When you were talking about people eventually get to a point where, you know, it's easier to sit on the couch and order a pizza than go out and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
That goes with another block in Western society that exercise is supposed to be hard. If you find something that you are absolutely motivated to do and you put enough value on it, you're going to do it. For instance, I'll give you a perfect example. Any person who is a pet owner or a parent, are you motivated to, you know, hey, I don't feel like feeding the kids today or making lunch or, you know, putting the dog or cat food out because it's just not something I want to do today? No, you're not going to do that. You're going to put that out because it's a must. It's not a should. It's a must because you have to do that to keep the animals alive, to keep your children alive so that other repercussions, other consequences don't happen. If you find something that is strong enough, you're going to do it regardless. If your reason for exercising is just to, you know, lose weight and that's it, that may not be enough motivation for you. If you find something else, you find your, like what you're saying, your hierarchy of wants, if you put enough wants into the bag of exercising, you're going to get enough motivation from those wants that it's just something you do. there'll be excuses where, you know, people say, I don't have the time, I don't have the energy, I'm exhausted. And that's where you have to start looking at it as a must, not giving yourself excuses. If it's something that you absolutely want to do and it's going to be beneficial for you, take the time and write it out. Take the time to figure out why it's so important to you, how it's going to influence you, like what you were saying. If this person is going to gain more popularity by feeling better, by exuding that more confident attitude, and that's something that's very important to them, they're going to do a lot to get that. I have kind of a personal issue with a lot of cosmetic surgery just for looks. You know, cosmetic surgery for physical defects and things like that, understandable, not a problem. I have no problem with that. Cosmetic surgery just to look a certain way when you don't really need to, it kind of goes, in my opinion, off into that area of why do you feel like you don't have what you need already?
Well, and that's exactly it. Why don't you have what you need already? I think sometimes the hard work idea in the Western mentality, we force ourselves to want something. We try to convince ourselves to want something. Or we have an ideal that we've set up, but it's not attainable. Let's use the weight, and let's use the cosmetic surgery, all these things. These things, a lot of times, are based on something outside ourselves. Mm-hmm. There's some kind of measuring stick that our culture set up. If you're beautiful, this is what you look like. If you're beautiful, this is what you weigh. And people will love you because you'll look like a movie star. You'll be the same weight as a movie star, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there's this yardstick of beauty that's been put up there. Mm-hmm. And when we adopt that yardstick and when we let that yardstick determine our self-worth, then we're going to respond to it. The thing about it is sometimes I think it's a more organic process than that. My example is when I quit smoking. Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't smoked in 6 years or something like that. And I quit cold turkey. And the funny thing about quitting smoking is one day I just was like, I'm done smoking. I was just done smoking. Smoking is one of those things that, you know, with all due respect to people who do smoke, smoking, it's there's a damage that's incurring, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's actually, it's physically damaging. It's as physically damaging as you can get internally. At the time, I was compelled to damage myself physically. And I was at a place in my life that, you know what, I felt like I deserved the damage. When my perspective on my self-worth improved, and I said, you know what, I feel pretty good about myself, the compulsion to want to damage myself decreased. Quitting smoking got easier. Not mm-hmm. to say it was easy, because there would be times when the cravings would come up. In the past, when I quit smoking, the craving would come up. I'm like, oh, screw it. I want a cigarette too badly, you know. This last time, when I quit smoking, the craving would come up. I'm like, well, yeah, but I know where that's going to lead me. And all the negative stuff outweighed what I thought I was getting out of the activity of smoking. It kind of took care of itself organically. And I think a lot of times when people create a self-worth in their heads that's not based on a measuring stick, mm-hmm. they start to find themselves more easily adapting to these new routines. They find that they are more motivated to work out because they feel good about themselves. They're more motivated to eat better. You know, for some reason, all that junk food just doesn't taste as good. You know, all the compulsions that drive you to kind of want to beat yourself up a little bit. Bullies don't beat up guys they like. So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah. And the thing is, from your example, quitting smoking had gotten to a point where it was a must to continue to be a non-smoker than a should of I should continue to be a non-smoker. Went right in line with your idea of your self-image and your self-worth. Mm-hmm. Those two things together made it extremely powerful. It goes back to the law of attraction with people that, you know, say, well, if this law of attraction thing works, I should be able to win the lottery. I'm like, yes, you're exactly 100% correct. You should be able to win the lottery. And they play the lottery, and they put out their, you know, intentions, and they visualize and all this stuff, and they get $3 for a ticket here, and they get $3 for there, and like, you won the lottery. Mm-hmm. You had a winning ticket. It was worth $3. No, I meant $1 million or $2 million or $58 million or something like that. And like, what you were putting out was that you wanted to win the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
The universe will reflect back to you at the level of what you're able to accept, what you ask for. Wherever you find yourself right now, is an accumulation of what has happened in your past, what you've put out to the past and how things have come back. Mm-hmm. What is really good about this is it doesn't matter where you find yourself.
You may find yourself living in a shotgun
shack. Exactly, exactly, exactly.
Same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was, yeah. And the days go by. Mm-hmm. When you start making these changes with the law of attraction or just in general, you will find yourself in a different place. Like right now, there must have been a combination of things that was happening to you between 7 to 10 years ago that all started coalescing that allowed you to get to that point where you felt that increase in self-confidence and self-worth and just right with the world, so that needing to smoke was no longer a want. It was no longer a must. It became a, we're good friends and everything, but we have not spent enough time to go back through each other's complete and unabridged personal history. I mean, you know for yourself if there were changes starting to happen 7 to 10 years ago that you could see possibly leading up to not smoking that actually led to where you are right now. And I can definitely see those for myself. I can see, you know, 5, 10 years ago what was happening that have led me to where I am right now. Now, do I want to be exactly where I am at this point in my life right now in the next 5 or 10 years? Of course not. Right. Because then that means I've plateaued. Mm-hmm. That means that I'm not doing anything new. I'm not learning anything new. I'm just following the routine and hoping something interesting happens sooner or later.
It's kind of interesting what you're saying about the 7 to 10 years ago. I think it's really the reverse, is that what was building my self-confidence was actually not tolerating my circumstance. I mean, 7 to 10 years ago, I was in a job that I did not like. Mm-hmm. So actually 7 years ago, I quit that job and am in the job I am in now, which I love what I do. Mm-hmm. The thing is a lot of people just kind of accept that. They accept where they are. They say that, you know, they can't do better, they won't do better, they don't like where they are, and they just kind of live with it because they accept that there's no other options when there's a million other options. And I think it's kind of a perspective of seeing what your world is available with and just going out and doing and trying. You know, the law of attraction is kind of funny because you talk about turning wants into musts. Yeah, I'm not really sure about the language on that, but I know what you're saying with it. It makes sense to me. What you call a must is what I see is just being it. The schools that teach the law of attraction can kind of be misleading because the idea is whatever you want, you can have if you just ask for it. But so much focus is putting on the want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And there's more to it than that.
There's a lot more to it than that. My thing is that when you focus on a want, you're focusing on what you don't have. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest problem I have. I want to be financially well off. I don't have financial prosperity. I look at people who talk about all the things they don't have, and I'm like, wow. I look at people who have, you know, 10 times less than you, but yet you're miserable. I don't understand that. A lot of the thing is that you can't really attract what you want into your life if you don't appreciate what you already have.
Exactly. And one of the catchphrases that you may hear when you start really delving into the nitty-gritty guts of the law of attraction is you can't receive abundance when you're constantly projecting a deficit. This goes exactly with what you're saying with, you know, I want, I want, I want. That's basically using the law of attraction saying, I don't have, exactly like what you're saying. And the law of attraction gives you what you put out, what you ask for.
So what would you say to a person who says, well, yeah, but I'm unemployed, I don't have a job. How can I convince the universe that I have when I don't?
See, that goes with how we're taught to think, especially in Western culture. It's like, if we don't have, then we should ask for what we don't have. This goes more into the mechanics of how the law of attraction works, where the thoughts is one aspect. The visualization is one thing that you can do or not. It works for some people. It doesn't work for other people. But the powerhouse, what actually gets things in motion, is the emotion, the emotion, energy in motion, like we talked about in one of our previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. If you are constantly putting out with your thoughts and that your emotions and everything that you're not worth more than minimum wage, or, you know, you'll take whatever you can get, you'll rather make some money than no money at all, that's very negative thinking right there. Mm-hmm. And if you constantly are putting out negative thinking, you're going to constantly be getting negative experiences back to you. You're not going to have all negative experiences. Even if you're thinking negatively, you're occasionally going to have positive experiences. I mean, don't get me wrong in this way. But at the same time, for someone who's unemployed, is looking for work, or wants to be employed, you'd have to go back to the subconscious. You'd have to see, what does the subconscious say? Are they unemployed because they spent 20 years at a company and were laid off because the company went belly up, or they were just fired for some little, you know, stupid little reason, whatever? That would cause an emotional subconscious link where it says, look, I gave all this time, I gave all of my life for so long, for so many years to working, to making a living and everything. And now, you know, they just brush me aside like nobody's business. That's a subconscious emotional thing that could possibly be happening. And if that's what's going on with somebody who's unemployed and they're out there looking for work, that's what's going to be in their driver's seat. That's going to be the main thing with all their actions. Now, they may not know why or how they're shooting themselves in the foot. They may go to an interview and something minor, some nonverbal communication thing that they do with who they're being interviewed with, might just put in the mind of the interviewer that, no, this person is not who we're interested in. Whereas somebody else who doesn't have that block will actually be like, oh, yeah, you know. It goes back to, I think, what we were talking about with Soulmates episode, where if you're looking for love, you know, don't look for your twin flame. Don't look for your soulmate and accept only your twin flame or soulmate. Look for what you really want, you know, a positive relationship. And in this example, it would be look for what you really want. Look for a occupation, a job, or something that you can be happy about.
So in this scenario, what would you say that guy really wants? What is creating what he has now? I just want to put this out there before you answer the question. My belief with the whole law of attraction thing is you don't put it to work. It's constantly working. You're always, whatever, what's in your world is what you're already attracting because of what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
So in this guy's scenario, what would you say that his wants are? The guy who is bitter after 20 years of working at a job and was laid off and can't seem to get work again.
Okay, so that's the specific scenario that we're going with, that he worked for 20 years and he was laid off?
Right.
Okay.
Because that's what we used coming up to this, right?
Yeah. If we're going to go with that specifically.
Hypothetically, of course.
Of course. We're not referring to anyone specifically. Look.
Fred McMulderberry. We're not referring to you, Fred McMulderberry. So don't worry about this.
You don't actually know a Fred, do you?
I know nobody named Fred McMulderberry.
Me neither. I don't even know if I've ever seen that name used in a movie or anything like that.
No, you haven't. You haven't, because it came out of my head, just like all the other flotsam and jetsam that comes out of
there. There you go. If this person was laid off after 20 years of devoted service to whatever company that they were working for, there's going to be self-worth issues. There's going to be emotional issues. There's going to be all kinds of...
But putting those aside, though...
You can't do that, though. You can't.
Sure you can.
No, I think
you can.
Not when you're working with the law of attraction and trying to change your circumstance. How would you put them aside and actually change your circumstances?
Question was, what does this guy want? Using Fred McMulderberry in this case, I am having coffee with him, and of course I'm buying the coffee because he's unemployed. Uh-huh. He's sitting there saying, you know, I put 20 years of my life into that job. I can't believe this. And they laid me off, and I didn't even get, you know, squat of that. I got like severance package for what, however 20 months or whatever, you know, and here I am pounding the pavement, and there's no jobs for me. There's no jobs, and I'm trained in this specific industry, and this industry's dried up, and I can't find a job. And I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking, I know what you want. You want to be the martyr in this case. It's a terrible thing when people get laid off. It's a terrible thing when people lose their job after 20 years. Mm-hmm. It's not the way that they thought things were going to go. Life is kind of funny that way. I would say, you know what? He wants to be heard, obviously. He wants people to know that he's been dealt an injustice. And to me, that boils down to he wants to know that he's been victimized by the corporation. He wants to be the victim. Mm-hmm. Once you're the victim, boom, your power's gone.
Mm-hmm. That's why I was starting off to go through the whole self-worth and everything, is because that's his conscious mind wanting to be the victim. But inside, everybody wants to feel worthy. They want to feel like they have something to contribute, like they are needed. The outward projection of him being the martyr is basically the mirror reflection of inside him wanting to feel worthy again, feel like he has self-worth, because those 20 years that he was working for that company, you know, he was like, the company was making the highest quality widgets in the whole wide world. Mm-hmm. And say he was working on the assembly line, he could sit there and go, you know what, I don't know where this widget is going, but it's going to increase the value or comfort in someone's life. And then he could see his widgets that from this company in TV and movies and on billboards and at friend's house. And, you know, he says, you know, my worth was I helped create that. I may not have done that one specifically, but somebody somewhere has a widget. It's bringing value and more ease to their life. So I would say what they absolutely at their core want is to feel worthy again, to feel some kind of able to give back.
Well, then let me say this about that.
Okay. All right.
Let me say this about that. And maybe what needs to happen with anyone who's trying to work with manifestation or law of attraction to attract what they want in their lives that they do not have, the self-identity that they have, the ego, mm-hmm. their identity and the ego has to die.
Hmm.
And I say that because here's a guy whose wife, she's been a homemaker for 20 years, right? She raised her children and now she's not working and all this other stuff.
Is this Fred's wife?
This is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Fred McMulderberry. Her name is Janet McMulderberry. And so Janet McMulderberry, you know, has never worked a day in her life. Uh-huh. Well, she's never worked as far as they've been married. His sense of self-worth is basically about what he's able to provide.
Mm-hmm.
He's throwing that away. If being a self-worth is being a provider, he's got a very narrow definition of what a provider is. A provider is somebody who is providing widgets by my manufacturing skill in it. Rather than realizing a provider comes in many shapes and forms, probably who needs his provisions more than the person who bought the widget is his wife. Mm-hmm. He needs to go out and put food on her table. So stripping away the idea that he has to be this person and he can no longer be useful and he can't provide for his wife because he's been victimized, if he empowers himself and says, you know what, I need a job. A lot of people that are unemployed, not everyone, and I don't want to be generalization here, but there are a lot of people who are unemployed that they'll say, oh, no, there's no way I'm ever doing that work or that work or that work.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, a hierarchy of want there. I want to do this, and I want to do this specifically. You know, it's I would rather not work than work in a field that I don't want to be in. And that's their choice. How you see yourself and view yourself, the ego and the identity has to die and be willing to take on a rebirth and completely re-identify yourself. And I think then you can start creating.
That's really easy to be said, a lot harder to be done. Since this is an area that I work with a lot of people in, I know what I'm going to say, but I'm really, really curious to hear what you have to say, where going from that level of that ego of being, I have to do things this way or there is no other way, to actually accomplishing what they need to accomplish. How does he go from being a martyr, feeling useless, to feeling more worthwhile again and actually being motivated to do whatever it needs to be done to get done what he needs to get done?
He has to go through and decide what is the most important things in his life. In my example, I think if I kept up at my last job, I probably would have lost that job, or I would have just found a way to survive at the job and probably cost me my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
My marriage is one of the most important things to me in my life. And, you know, there's just not much that's really going to step in between it. And that was one of those things. I was like, you know what? This isn't worth it. Not to me. I said, you know what? I'm just going to just go for it. I'm going to just do something more in a field that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I could have gone with what my skill sets were that I thought they were. But what I did was, as I said, I'm just going to go for a complete change of career, more in line with what I want, even though I may not have the skill sets that I need. And I did. And it worked. I just went for it. I knew what I wanted to be in, and I just went for it. I didn't say, I want this and lamented not having it. I just said, you know what? This is like you talked about, the visualization, knowing what you want. I just said, this is where I'm going to be, and I just started taking action on it. And I didn't care if I didn't get interview after interview after interview after interview, which was the case. I didn't care. That wasn't it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't focused on the losses. I wasn't focused on any of those things. I said, you know what? This is where I want to be, and I will be there. I just need to continue on this path, and I got there. And, you know, it's like however long something takes is however long it takes.
Exactly. And from what you're talking about, where it was, I can stay in this job and muddle through it and, you know, just accept it because it's a paycheck. I can see it ruining my marriage. It became a must to maintain your marriage and a should to stay at the job. And so therefore, taking anything else to be able to maintain the marriage was a priority. That was a must. That was a no excuses. Like, no, I am not losing my marriage to maintain the job I have. That is just not going to happen.
I also didn't like who I was. That was probably the biggest thing. The marriage was a byproduct of it.
Yeah, and all these things became a point where who you were at that time, you were not happy with, and you said, you know what? I'm not taking this anymore. I want to have something different. I want to experience something different. I'm going to do that. It's very hard for a lot of people to do that because they don't believe that they can. And one of the things that I have found with person after person after person after person, everybody has more strength, more stamina, and more ability by leaps and bounds than they give themselves credit for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
People are able to endure so much more than what they believe they can.
Mm-hmm.
If you start believing that you are able to overcome all obstacles and you go from, like Fred, being a martyr to taking life by the reins and saying, you know what, I'm going to get what I want because that's just going to make me happier and I'm not going to settle for anything less, that whole transition is extremely powerful.
How does that happen? To ask you the same question, you said you had an answer for it.
With Fred, one of the things that he needs to find is his self-worth. Part of what you were talking about is talking with his wife, Janet, and finding out the options that are available. And let's say that Fred was a NASA engineer. Well, maybe not NASA. We'll say some big engineering firm. You know, he went to school for 6-7 years. He has a master's degree in, you know, engineering to make these widgets. When he gets laid off, he has options. If one of his options is, I need to support my wife, and that is a must instead of a should, he needs to find a way to take care of that. A scenario that I could see playing out, if that is a must, is he might end up taking a job at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
When he gets off at McDonald's, he might spend an hour or two putting out resumes to other firms and other places and talking to his wife, Janet, saying, look, if we have to move to the middle of Greenland or the North Pole or something and to get a really good job, are you willing to do that? And she might be like, oh, hell no. Mm-hmm. No. I'm not moving into a cold climate. I'm like, okay, what about Hawaii? And like, if you get a place in Hawaii, I'll pack our bags and we'll be ready to go. So it's basically take care of what needs to be taken care of right there. Fred should not assign his identity to what's making him money at the time. His identity needs to be assigned more to who he is outside of his job, such as a husband.
Right.
And so therefore, his whole identity is not tied into his job, which was one of the causes of being a martyr. You know, his whole identity was, I am like the best engineer, widget engineer in the whole wide world. You know, me and my team are able to just boom, boom, boom. I only pick the best and the brightest. And, you know, being 86 from that, if that's your whole identity and you end up working fast food place, your whole identity will then be, I flip burgers. Going from that level, from that engineering level to the fast food level, that could seriously injure people if your whole identity is tied into what you do. But absolutely. On the other hand, if his identity has nothing to do with his occupation, you know, he could say, I am the best engineer in the whole wide world. My team is awesome. And I only pick the best people and I have a great time. It's a lot of fun. And then all of a sudden, boom, he gets laid off. I'm like, you know what? I got laid off. My severance pay is about to kick out. We're going through our savings. I need money. Plain and simple. Me and Janet need some money. So McDonald's is hiring. I went through the drive-thru. I got an application. I'm starting Monday. Now, I ain't going to be there very long because I know I'm awesome. I know my skills. I know what I've done in the past. I've overcome these obstacles while I was working. So I know that I'm going to be, you know, back on my horse in no time, and that this whole McDonald's thing is just a temporary thing.
Yeah.
And approaching it from that perspective, the ego gets all it needs. the ego gets all kinds of what it needs, whereas the martyr aspect doesn't get a whole lot of time to sit and play.
I think another good way of feeding the ego to give it all it needs is actually taking it all the way back to the exercise you talked about, mm-hmm. which was to write and write and write and write. That writing exercise is also another good exercise that people say to use when you want to find your life's purpose.
Oh, yeah.
The great thing about life's purpose is, and this is a very Western culture thing that gets us all topsy-turvy. We've based so much of our identity on, you know, how many letters and dots are at the end of our name, how much schooling we've had, or whatever we do for a living. But, you know, your life's purpose has nothing to do with your job.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say your life's purpose is to be a doctor. You know, your life purpose may be to heal people. Have you ever just had somebody that was really depressed? You went out with them for a cup of coffee, and then they left feeling a little better after they got to sit and talk to you?
Mm-hmm.
That's healing.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
You know, there's so many things that healing, and I'm talking to a healer. I'm healing the choir is what I'm doing.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Ah. But that's the thing about the life purpose. I think when we know what our life purpose is and we really find that, it doesn't matter what our job is, because there's thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs that we can do our life purpose through. I think that really makes a big difference. And I think that writing exercise is a really, really good one for people who are really looking at kind of getting out of whatever hole or rut they're in to help them kind of in the manifestation. Because I think when you're working with your life purpose, manifestation happens.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because when you're working with your life's purpose, you are in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the moment, you're not sitting there looking at what you don't have, because wanting is taking you out of the moment. And when you're in the moment, you realize what you do have, and you realize that you're working with your purpose. You know, all the other stuff is just, it's just window dressing is all it is.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things that I have found from consistently working with the law of attraction and going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into it is that when you start working from a positive energy, from positive emotions, from more positive thoughts, you start attracting more of the experiences for what you actually want. You start being drawn to social groups or to different places at certain times. You might be sitting at home watching a movie and all of a sudden you're like, I got to go to the mall. Or, you know, why do I want to go to the mall? Or I am having the biggest craving for ice cream right now and we don't have any in the house. I got to go to the store and get ice cream. Like, nah, man, movie's still on. Like, well, do I stay with the movie or do I go get ice cream? What happens is that strong, almost overwhelming desire to go get ice cream is the impetus to get out and go to the store at that time. The scenario that could play out in that whole thing is you get to the store, you're sitting there, you're looking at all the ice cream, you're like, I don't have a desire for ice cream anymore. I still want to get ice cream because Janet said she wanted some, and me being Fred, you know, I gotta go get some. Like, well, she never told me what kind she wanted. All of a sudden this other person starts walking up and you're in their way. So you kindly move over and you say, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. I'm like, oh, no problem. I don't know what kind I want either. All of a sudden, you're like, oh, you know, I do that too sometimes. And before you know it, you're in this very casual conversation with this other person. This other person could be a lead to somebody else who is able to get you to where you want to be in your life. It may not be the one and only step, you know, to where you want to be, but it might be that one more. If this is Fred getting ice cream and he's sitting there working at McDonald's and he's like, you know what? I know my job is just around the corner. I am going to be back on my horse in no time because that's just where I'm going to be and that's just the way it is and there's just no doubt about it. And all of a sudden this guy is like, oh yeah, I just started an engineering firm about 3 months ago and I had to fire an employee today, and it's like only after 3 months because he just wasn't being that good at all. I'm like, oh, what kind of engineering do you do? Oh, we make woofles. Woofles? Those are almost like widgets.
Mm-hmm.
I was laid off after 20 years of being an engineer, and I'm like, oh my goodness, that is a possible job opportunity right there. The thing is, people hear those things like, oh man, I got a job because I found this guy who I was talking to in the middle of the ice cream aisle. It's like, no, let's take it back even more. You were putting out the intention, you were putting out the energy, you were putting out using the law of attraction to say, I'm going to get back to a place where I feel awesome and feel comfortable because that's the most fun place for me to be. The universe was attracting you and attracting the other person to meet in a certain place, and that's why you felt that overwhelming feeling to get out and go at that time, because there was a whole timing thing. When you get into that state, not only are you attracting other people, but you're being attracted to other people that you can help and right. That can help you.
One of my troubles with the idea of the law of attraction, and I personally subscribe to it, people's eyes glaze over when they see a law of attraction, because a lot of times what gets thrown out there along with law of attraction is putting out your intention to the universe, and people are like, oh great, now we're going on some kind of new agey blah, blah, blah thing. I think really it's the same language. I believe in putting out to the universe. I believe in the universe responding, and I believe in the manifestation of all those energies and the synchronicities that go with it. I believe all that. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe in any of it on that level, there's still a lot of merit to it, just by the fact of if Fred goes out to get ice cream, if he's still in the victim mentality, Fred's going to sit there and he's going to run into this guy. You know, he might just say, you know, I worked at this place for 20 years. And what's the other guy going to do? Complainer, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Exactly.
Or if he's kind of like Fred, he might just kind of try to out-complain him, you know. I've seen people do that. You know, really? Well, my hip hurts worse than your knee, you know, and all that. So, but he's in a positive frame of mind. He's like, you know, I'm actually not working right now. I'm really looking to get back into work. You know, I'm doing this, but really my field is engineering. That's where I want to go. Oh, really? You know, and you're constantly leaving yourself open. There's this openness to having that positive attitude. And the law of attraction also works on your filter bases.
Oh, totally.
If you see yourself a certain way, what you're going to do is the ego to preserve itself and the identities to avoid death, because identity is like an animal. We've said that before. You know, it wants to avoid dying. So what it'll do is it'll try to affirm its identity. And so if you have a negative outlook on things and something positive comes along, the identity is going to go, no, your world's a negative world. We're filtering this out. Either it didn't happen or we can explain a negative reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it is just your perception of your situation. Once again, I'll say it again, nothing happens to you. Things only happen. You choose how to deal with it. If we sit and brace ourselves for the bad and lament it and dread it, or if the bad happens and we sit and are just in a state about it all day long, these things happen. I think that the best thing we can do is realize when something happens that turns our world upside down, there's an opportunity there for us.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's, what is it, Chinese crisis and opportunity are the same character or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember what it is.
The Chinese kanji, the symbol for crisis and opportunity is the same character.
Right. Right. And it makes sense to me. You know, maybe Fred's life purpose was not to make widgets. Maybe his life purpose was something completely unrelated. If he was still in that job and comfortable and making the income he wanted, he would never be able to find his life purpose by staying in that environment. It happened that he lost his job to give him the opportunity to look for his life purpose. There's a lot of people that say, and I said this about the cancer one in the healing episode, a lot of people say, you know, me losing my job was the best thing that could have happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a lot of cases, it can be. And I think our lives are designed that way. I think our lives are designed to find those opportunities and take those lessons from them. So I think manifestation sometimes comes in that really backwards form.
Yeah, the universe tries to work with you as best it can and get you what you are asking for as quickly as possible. And sometimes things happen really, really, really fast. You know, it's like what I said earlier, when you asked me at the very beginning to say in about 3 sentences, how would you describe the law of attraction? I said, ask and you shall receive.
Mm-hmm.
What we've gone through this whole episode is, how do you ask? What happens when you're asking? How can you figure out when you're asking and how that asking is being either heard or not heard?
Right.
From that point on, all you're doing is receiving. And I think that even though that one phrase is very simplistic, you can go very, very deep into all the nooks and crannies and mechanics of how that works.
Yeah.
I think that is actually a perfect place to end this episode.
Very good.
So for DonDalton.com, this is Donald Dalton wishing you a life fantastic.
And this is David Deere. Keep your light on. And thank you, everyone, for listening.